Hello and welcome to Sound Progress, the XRM podcast where we meet the people driving climate progress. Did you know that 71% of the Earth's surface is covered by water? And of this, 96% is in our oceans. It's this natural capital that makes life possible for all of us. But do our oceans also hold the key to fighting climate change? And if so, how can we, as investors, protect our oceans and more widely biodiversity loss by investing in both public and private markets? It's not an easy question for one person, so I asked three people. I'm Harshal Pant, and I'm delighted to take you with me on this journey to discover the power of blue waters. We start our deep dive into all things oceans, no pun intended, with a view from the scientific community. Dr. Anna Quirós is a senior benthic ecologist at Plymouth Marine Laboratory and the winner of the 2022 XRM Research Award. Anna has dedicated her work to understanding our oceans and coastlines and how they can play a pivotal role in saving our planet. Let's see what Anna can tell us about blue carbon.
We use the term to refer to the ability of the ocean to serve as a carbon sink. So what that means is the way in which coastal and open ocean systems capture CO2 from the atmosphere and capture more than they release. So they have a net positive effect on carbon concentrations in the atmosphere.
Straightforward, right? But how exactly does that work? We know it isn't the water itself that's acting as the carbon sink. So what or who is doing all this work?
So in the past, blue carbon was used traditionally to refer to coastal vegetated habitats. So that means particularly mangrove, seagrass, and salt marsh ecosystems, which cover a little fringe in some areas of our coastal areas. And they are very important habitats because they are biodiversity hotspots, and they also serve as carbon sinks. The plants in these habitats capture CO2 from the atmosphere and turn it into their living biomass. And that biomass eventually degrades and falls on the soil, which then captures that carbon for hundreds of years, potentially. More recently, we started looking more broadly into the open ocean and thinking about what other aspects, what other parts of the ocean provide this service. And there are many. So phytoplankton, also being photosynthetic organisms, also fix carbon. Macroalgae in particular, seaweed, kelp, they do this very well. In fact, they're the most, in some areas of the planet, they are the most productive of such organisms. So they have the highest rates of CO2 capture.
Fascinating. Now we're all up to speed on blue carbon and the science behind it. What can we do with this knowledge? How can we at XRM help? I went and talked to Adam Gibbon, natural capital lead at XRM Orts, about why investors should be concerned with open oceans and coastlines, as well as natural capital more broadly.
In the natural capital space, we invest in businesses that derive revenue streams from protecting, restoring, and sustainably managing nature. I think today the biggest opportunities are in the coastal zones. So in particular, this is in protecting and restoring mangroves. This is important because they have very high carbon sequestration rates and large stocks of carbon, particularly in the soils. As well as climate benefits, there's huge biodiversity benefits from protecting and restoring mangroves. And in the market, in terms of investment, they're also attractive because carbon credits associated with coastal zones, this blue carbon, do tend to attract a premium in the market. So as well as mangroves, we're also seeing some seagrass and seaweed opportunities coming in. Much of our investment in this space does center around the generation of revenues from carbon credits. And if we are to generate carbon credits, this requires that the project identifies and quantifies the carbon stocks and flows. And then as an investor, our job is to invest to change the activities that will impact those stocks and flows in a positive way. So to avoid emissions or to increase the sequestration in carbon. So to give you an example, in mangroves, when they're deforested, both the above and the soil carbon is lost. So what we can do there as an investment opportunity is to work with the owners or the stewards of that mangrove forest to protect it and generate carbon credits, which we can then sell to companies that are looking to make a contribution to climate change mitigation. So to give you an even more concrete example of something that we've done, through one of our portfolio companies, Climate Seed, they're working with the San Cristiano Ejido in Mexico, and they're supporting them with management of degraded mangroves. So they're supporting them to do assisted natural regeneration, restore hydrological conditions, remove waste, and then do long-term biological monitoring. And the investment that's made through Climate Seed will be repaid through the sales of carbon credits.
Adam touched on a very important point about biodiversity and regeneration. Let's go talk to Anna again to understand a bit more about how instrumental her work is in protecting the oceans, the dangers ahead, and the opportunities we have to make an impact as investors that Adam described earlier.
So I work not just with blue carbon habitats, but with ocean management strategies in general. And so that's really important, not just for the management of our blue carbon habitats, but the management of our biodiversity in general in the ocean, and also the protection of the species that we don't just like to protect, the ones that we like to eat, the ones we like to harvest. So with the climate emergency in our hands, we need to look at our ocean systems in with the dynamics that they have. So they are responding to climate change already. And so we need to understand that the mechanisms that we have at the moment and the management strategies we have at the moment are not going to remain as they are. Indeed, they're already changing very much. And so if we want to do that in a way that is effective, we need to think about these climate effects. We have plenty of evidence about climate change and its effects on the ocean.
This is where it gets really interesting, where Anna gives us that missing piece of the puzzle that will help us move from simply understanding the evidence to affecting the actions that will help power the transition to a more sustainable world. Here's a question for you. What do you think are the biggest challenges we face in implementing this change? Here's some help from Anna.
What we don't have is the practical mechanisms to address those changes. And so we need to think about ways to bring people with us to convince regulators, policymakers, the colleagues in the industry and in the coastal communities that rely on these resources, that we need to invest in ways to manage the ocean that are resilient to change, that are allowing these species to adapt to climate change, and with them, our blue economy. It's also about working with our social scientists, our economists, to translate that climate evidence into metrics that general people understand outside of the scientific community. And so that's why in the last 5 years, I've really been working with others outside of my ecology community and really trying to bridge that gap, so we don't just have more and more refined evidence about climate change, but we actually understand how we can promote change, a transition to a climate resilient way of managing the future ocean. So, for instance, yesterday I was in a workshop with the colleagues in Orkney Islands, which is a tiny region of Scotland, these islands off of the northeast coast of Scotland. And what you have there is we were working with the Orkney Marine Plan Advisory Group, which is a local group of local policy and industry leaders and community leaders that are discussing how to manage the ocean around Orkney Islands. What we have there is real perspectives of people that work with the ocean, in the ocean, that depend on the ocean for their livelihoods. And it's really about understanding what their needs are, what do they care about, listening to, you know, it's not that people don't want to fight climate change, it's that sometimes they need to be helped in seeing what tools might be available to them. When people talk about real issues that affect them on the day-to-day, for instance, fishermen, talk about spatial squeeze, you know, being told that they can't fish in areas where they have historically fished for generations sometimes, let's say because we want to promote the climate resilience of a particular area. We need to provide these people with really the evidence in a format that they understand. And so I think harnessing that local power is extremely important. And Orkney is a good example where we have grassroots support for carbon conservation.
Anna's story clearly shows the potential and the need for her work to go mainstream. I turn to Adam to ask how, on a broader scale, policymakers could guide local efforts and how this impacts the investment approach in private markets.
In any private equity or project finance and investment, national policies in particular tend to be very important in terms of basic regulations and the tax environment, etc. So I think I'll give you two examples of how the policy environment is particularly important. So firstly, we have the international policy, and this is largely what's flowing down from the UNFCCC. These policy statements and agendas drive then national agendas and corporate agendas, which drives demand for carbon and biodiversity offsets, and hence the opportunities for investment. And then secondly, carbon is a relatively new asset class. So countries at the national level are often grappling with ways to regulate it and tax it. And this can be quite a fluid situation. So for us, we need to do our analysis before going into an investment, but then keep on top of that changing policy environment as well, both through our own work and also by our trusted partners in the ground that we've invested in. In terms of building a balanced portfolio, what we offer is an opportunity to be proactively investing in natural capital. If we're to avert the climate and biodiversity crises, we're going to need a seismic shift in terms of investment flows from destructive to restorative and protective investments. And what we're offering through our strategy is to be on that restorative and protective side. I think given that over half the world's GDP is moderately or highly dependent on nature and its services, very few investment portfolios will be unaffected by the climate and biodiversity crises that we're seeing.
You've heard Adam share the approach taken in private markets and impact that investors can make, and you've heard from Anna. But what can be done in public markets? I went to Chris Aiko, chair of the AXA IM Investment Institute and CIO of AXA IM Core, to ask him.
In the listed equity market, we can address biodiversity loss by focusing on companies whose business models and products generate positive outcomes relative to those that damage the environment. The framework for investing is set by the evolving regulatory environment and by the massive improvement we've seen in data that helps us assess companies' biodiversity footprints. The UN's Sustainable Development Goals help define objectives for investors. At AXA IM, in our listed equity strategy, we focus on land and animal preservation, the water ecosystem, sustainable materials, and recycling.
So I asked Anna and Adam what they think the future holds for the topics we discussed. Enthusiasm, hope, concern. Listen to what they had to say.
Actually, I feel quite hopeful for the future. We have the tools in our hands. We have a climate change emergency. But as we saw, I think during the COVID crisis, things can change very quickly if we really want to. And I still have faith that we will use these tools in the right time. We are already seeing a big change in the language used at government level, at national level, in terms of policy development and in the acceleration of these strategies. So I remain hopeful. That's what motivates me to get out of bed every morning. And so I think we should all be hopeful, but there is no time to waste.
I've been very lucky to get to spend through my work a lot of time in the field. So working with people who live in and around these beautiful but degraded ecosystems. And I've seen how urgently capital is needed on the ground.
So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And now the oceans fascinate you as much as they do me. I also wanted to tell you about the AXA IM Research Award, which returns later this year in search for another academic enabling the just and green transition through their research. You heard from Anna, our 2022 winner, and the winner of the 2023 award will receive €100,000 in recognition of the impact of their research in partnership with the AXA Research Fund. For more information and how to apply, see the show notes. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself, and if you can, of the planet too. This marketing communication does not constitute, on the part of AXA Investment Managers, a solicitation or investment, legal or tax advice. This material does not contain sufficient information to support an investment decision. The value of your investment can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. Please see the website www.axa-im.com/soundprogress for full disclaimer.